If I had a dollar bill, yes, I believe I surely will go to town and drink my fill early in the morning. Little darling, she's a red thing, man, she makes my legs too sing. Wanna buy a diamond ring early in the morning.
Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And today we are talking about the 2016 Best Picture nominee, Hell or High Water.
Good movie.
Nominated for Best Picture from last year. This is a brand new Western. We were going to do it last August when it came out, but we missed it. The scheduling didn't work out, so we definitely wanted to come back around and talk about it now. I waited to watch this until I knew we were going to do it for the podcast, because I knew it was an episode. This is a very good movie. I was
actually not amazed, but surprised. Not surprised. What am I looking for? I was pleased.
Yeah.
I didn't expect what I saw.
Oh yeah? What were you expecting from it?
I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect, and Jeff Bridges, I assumed, would be doing his gruff Texas Ranger thing. Which he did, but I didn't expect the script to be as good as it was.
It's a terrific script. I would say a movie mostly driven by the script.
Yes.
Yeah. More than the filmmaking, although that is quite good. It's very good, but the script is the main feature here, and it's a good one. It's written by the guy, I forget the guy's name. He's an actor originally. He wrote Sicario, a film from
good movie.
Yeah. Right. Really terrific movie as well, from 2015, I believe. And that one was. You can see the commonality between the two, which is that it's a stark thriller that is also has sort of a socio-economic component to it, and
great interpersonal relations. I mean, the dialogue between the four main characters in this movie is great.
Yes,
I love it.
It's really well written dialogue, and I usually am a fan of more writerly, ornate dialogue. We've talked about this on the show. This is way more conversational, way more realism based dialogue, and it's still great. It's still terrific. Still
very. It fits.
It's got a good ear for these guys, Good. good sense of who these people are coming out through the dialogue. Very much so. And what this movie is, Hell or High Water, is a modern day film, almost a crime thriller. I would say more than a Western, but it is a Western.
Substitute horses or cars for horses, and you got a Western.
Pretty much, yeah.
Robin Banks. A lot of the same dialogue would work in a horse opera, it's great.
Yeah, this actually could straight up be a Western if you just set it 100 years prior, and it wouldn't have to change very much at all.
Right.
But one thing that you get from it being a modern Western is that you get a world of characters growing up in the remnants of the Western, essentially.
Yeah.
Like everyone in this film... is in West Texas. There's a lot of economic issues as well, but they're all basically spent their lives living within the mythology of the Old West. There's quite a bit of talk of cowboys and Indians, the Comanche in particular.
Right? Can you believe how many people have guns?
Yeah. Well, I love that. That's a great part.
They
of
all got guns.
Mm-hmm. This has, I mean, look, we make a point of not talking about politics on this episode, on this show very much, I think if you listen enough, you probably know that we're neither of us big fans of the current administration, but this film kind of demands, I think, a little bit of a talk of politics because it is a political film. I mean, not subtly. It is, It is very much about the economic concerns that have been a major part of the conversation for the last year in this country, especially from the white working class, which is what this film is all about. And gun culture is in there as well, very much. You know,
no kidding.
As it exists today, as it exists today because of the Western as well. That you can still see the influence of what was going on in this country 150 years ago today, especially in parts of it like Texas. I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time in Texas myself. Some, but not much. But at least going off of how it is presented in films and in the news and just culturally, you can see it here in this film. This is largely what this film's about.
Yeah, and some of it, I mean, some of it is, there are uplifting parts to this movie, believe it or not, but there are some really depressing things about this movie as well.
Yeah.
And just the like you said, the poor white faction of society trying to make ends meet, dealing with the banks, etc.
Oh, the banks, yeah. Well, that's another thing that is timely about this.
Yeah.
People getting absolutely screwed by the banks, you know, because of predatory loaning, mortgage loaning, and it's pretty...
Reverse mortgages, the whole thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's... I mean, this is a film that is very much, despite being a Western in a lot of ways and being deeply indebted to the Western, very much of its time, very much a 2016 film.
Yep.
There's even, you know, even talk about, there's even racial issues getting brought up in this quite a bit.
That's right, the half-breed.
Uh-huh,
in the Comanches. I love that scene in the casino, by the way. We'll talk about that.
Yes. I loved a lot of scenes in this movie. Another thing that's really interesting about this film is that it is a nominee for the Best Picture of the Year, which is not something that happens often with Westerns. I mean, again, you can kind of split hairs on this one. This is, you know, a crime thriller, has a bit indebted to the, you know, film noir a little bit maybe as well.
Yeah. In
modern day. All the same, I think this is a Western, and I don't think there's much confusion about it. This is straight up, you know, dealing with the same stuff that Westerns deal with, as you said.
Yeah.
But again, it is nominated for Best Picture, which, you know, doesn't happen too often. It has happened officially 19 times.
Oh, you counted. All right.
Well, I looked it up online. excuse me, that's not quite correct. 19 nominations, 4 wins. And that is going off of a generous definition of the Western that includes Giant, No Country for Old Men, and The Revenant. And it's interesting looking at this list. A lot of them are from very early in the lifespan of the Oscars. A lot of 30s and 40s films, or very recently, oddly enough.
But nothing in between, huh?
Not a lot in between. Like between the 50s and 1990 is How the West Was Won and Butch Cassidy, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it's Dances with Wolves and Unforgiven in the 90s. And then since the turn of the century, it's been a bit more. You got Brokeback Mountain, True Grit, Django Unchained, The Revenant, No Country for Old Men, and now Hell or High Water. So it's
all nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah, all of them. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I was a little surprised about Django, but
yeah.
And I love Django, so that's fine.
Name those again. Can you name those again? Real quick.
Well, here, I'll read all of them. All of the Westerns nominated for Best Picture. It's interesting.
All right. Okay.
In Old Arizona in 1928 is the first one.
Oh, a silent film, huh?
Yeah. Then Cimarron, first.
Which won, right?
Yeah, first one to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
Viva Villa, 1934. Ruggles of Red Gap. 35.
Charles Laughton. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Good job. then Stagecoach, The Oxbow Incident, Treasure of the Sierra Madre, High Noon, Shane, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Oh no.
Friendly Persuasion, Giant, The Alamo, How the West Was Won, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and then those ones I mentioned earlier, Unforgiven, Brokeback Mountain, True Grit, Django Unchained, No Country for Old Men, The Revenant, and Hell or High Water. And Dances with Wolves. I missed that one. But those are all the films nominated for Best Picture that are Westerns.
I was surprised. I didn't remember that True Grit was nominated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Was the original John Wayne movie nominated? No, you would have named. You would have mentioned that one.
Nope, just him. Just him. Well, maybe something.
Just
else,
him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's an interesting list of films.
Yeah.
Most of those probably worth a watch for us at some point. The Ruggles of Red Gap, for sure.
Yeah. Actually, I'd love to see that film.
Hey, why not? We'll give it a go sometime. But this one, I don't know. This is sort of unique. There's not a lot of modern day westerns in that list except this one. I don't know. So what? But if I were voting for the Academy Awards, I haven't seen all the nominated films, but of the things I've seen, this was my favorite, I would say.
What have you seen? La La Land?
Yes.
Arrival?
Yeah, saw that. Saw Moonlight. That's really good. Saw Hidden Figures. And
that's supposed to be great. I haven't seen that. But
maybe one of the others I saw. I haven't seen them all. But this struck me as my favorite of the nominated batch when I looked at a list of them. It's a good film. It's a crime movie. And yeah, of course, you know, it plays into all the stuff that we enjoy so much that we made a podcast about it. So basically, should we talk about the movie itself a little bit?
Oh, good idea. synopsis here.
Yeah, stars Chris Pine and Ben Foster as a pair of brothers. What's their last name again?
I was thinking about that just as I watched it for the second time. I ended up at the end of the movie. I still couldn't remember the characters' names.
Well, they're Tanner and Toby. Are they?
Toby. Toby was Chris Pine's character, but the last name I don't know.
Yeah, I forget their last name. Tanner and
Toby. What's Jeff Bridges' name in the
Marcus.
Movie? Marcus. Marcus. All right, good.
No, you have to listen for it. They don't say him very much.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. They call each other brother. Uh-huh. Chris Pine and Ben Foster.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah, the Tanner and Toby. I you know what? I'm gonna find out their last name. The movie opens with them robbing a bank because they are bank robbers, and that is what they are doing. They're hitting.
But why
small
are
banks.
They doing it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a large part of the film's. You know, why are they doing this? They're hitting small banks in economically downturned West Texas, just driving up, hitting them in the early morning, and then, getting out of there without taking any large bills, just loose bills, and then burying the getaway cars out in the desert. Then Jeff Bridges is played as a marshal that is, right before retirement.
Texas Ranger,
assigned,
yeah.
Yeah, yes, that's right. A Texas Ranger gets assigned, to hunt him down, take him down. And it is essentially cops and bank robbers, as you see in a lot of Westerns, as we have seen in a lot of Westerns, taking place in modern day, 2016, and with a lot of economic concerns and as well into the mix as to why they're doing it. And what the culture of this place drives people to do, and the general sense of people being screwed over by the banks and poverty that more or less seems to consume everyone's life in this part of or as it is presented in Hell or High Water.
You know, it's interesting. There are some unfortunate circumstances in this film, but there aren't any villains.
Absolutely not.
Per se.
No. Uh-huh.
You know. I mean, the brothers have a reason for why they're robbing banks, and we're going to talk about that, I'm sure, here in a minute. But
the Howard brothers, by the way.
Howard brothers, Tanner, okay.
Toby Howard. Yeah, I don't remember them saying that ever in the film.
And of course, Jeff Bridges and his partner have to do their job, you know.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But it's not a black or white film. It's not good guys, bad guys at all.
Very much not. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know, were you rooting for one or the other faction here?
Well, I didn't want, well, I don't want to give anything away just yet, but I wanted everybody to be happy, but that's impossible, right?
No, no one's going to be happy.
I wanted the brothers to succeed.
Yeah?
In screwing over the bank.
Fair enough.
You know, or not screwing over the bank, but foiling their plan to steal the land, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I still wanted him to get caught. I wanted Jeff Bridges to catch him.
Well, you get a sense that that's going to happen.
Yeah, well, the fact that Jeff Bridges is arranged opposite them, you know.
Yeah.
You know he's not just going to... you cast a character or an actor of that stature, you know, and it, once it becomes clear he's not some sort of Javert-esque villain kind of, you know, but he is equally sympathetic to them. Once that's clear, it's like, well, these guys are... They have to be doomed. This is just... this is never going to work. I mean, there's a sense of also that, like, Coen Brothers movie here, where it's just, ultimately, you know, this is not going to be sustainable for them. This is a doomed escapade, no matter
what. Doomed to some extent, but not, you know, not completely.
Well, yeah, uh-huh. As it turns out, the ending is a bit surprising, I would say. I did not see this ending coming.
Right.
Yeah. It has opened with a bank robbery. Well, actually, it opens with a sort of just a scroll across economically depressed Texas town. Covered in, like, derelict shops and graffiti. And,
old car bodies and shit like that, yeah.
Just sort of establishing the destitute world of this film. There are so many times you see, like, signs for check cash in places and free credit evaluations and high-interest loans and all sorts of stuff like this all over this place. Everywhere they go in this town is just every... There's just symbols of economic ruin everywhere.
Yeah,
this is as unpleasant as I've seen Texas looking in a film in a very long time, I would say.
Yeah, and I've seen some pretty unpleasant stuff in film in Texas.
That said, it's also very beautiful. It's a gorgeous film.
Yeah,
through and through. I mean, even just the desolate stuff you're looking at, you know, the economic downturn, Rust Belt despair is shot beautifully, and just the, you know, the huge lonely prairies that they're driving through too look great. It's a beautiful movie.
There's a lot more green in the movie than I thought there'd be. Did you notice that? looking down from the mountains, there was some, it was beautiful.
Well, it's a gorgeous country. I mean, even even the most sun crushed areas of it are, you know, there's a beauty to that sort of. I don't want to say desolation again, but just how hard the sun is hitting the plains at some point, it becomes gorgeous, or at least it does the way it's photographed in this movie.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it opens with this robbery, where they grab one of the tellers coming in as she's opening the bank up, and, you know, they got ski masks on. This is the Tanner and Toby Howard, the brothers, of course. They sort of push her in, and there's it's a little bit like she doesn't even take him seriously at first. Like, it seems almost like it's not for real. Until one of them
calls him stupid, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You recognize this actress?
No.
She's a character actress in a ton of stuff. I remember her from Breaking Bad. Where she played the meth head who crushes her boyfriend's head with an ATM.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. No, I never would have come up with that.
Remember that scene? Remember that?
I remember it, but I don't. I didn't remember her.
Stank. Yeah, that girl.
No, wouldn't have come up with that ever.
Oh well, I honestly, I've seen her in other stuff. She shows up in Justified, and every time I see her, I'm just, I ain't no skank.
You're right. Justified, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
Yeah, it's a character actress named. Her name is Dale Dickey. I checked it out. She appears in anything like this, any movie that takes place. In a South,
depressed West Texas town.
Yeah, economically depressed Southern setting with criminals. You're going to see this actress show up. Anyway, so they rob this bank, and it's a pretty great sequence. And then they go to another bank right away and rob that too. This is the one with the old guy trying to sell his coins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He has a gun.
Yeah, and he's got a gun. This is the first we see of the civilian gun population.
Toter, yeah.
They ask him, he's like, hey, you got a gun? You're damn right I got a gun.
Yeah, takes it out of the back of his belt mm-hmm. and puts it on the counter, for God's sake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, these guys are, amateur bank robbers. Like, we immediately figure out these guys are not, Ocean's 11 style,
but they're not total nincompoops either. No, they realize what they're doing. Yeah, they're clever.
They're clever, but they've never done this before. Yeah, uh-huh.
Right.
And and so yeah, this is of course, once they get out of there with the money, the guy grabs his gun off the counter and starts firing at him right away. And
just starts blasting out windows.
And, you know, I don't want to say, well, that's super believable Texas, but, you know, I don't know Texas enough, but, you know, it seems credible, at least the world that is being presented in this film feels credible to it.
Yeah.
And so we get to know these guys a little bit just in watching them operate here. Toby, played by Chris Pine, is the more traditional leading man of the two. he's sort of the more handsome, more together, more respectable of the brothers. And Tanner is the Ben Foster character. He's more of the loose cannon. You know, had multiple brushes with the law before. Kind of a wild man.
He's done time.
Yeah,
he just got out. Yeah.
Which are, you know, those are kind of archetypal criminal characters, I would say, especially if they're, you know, brothers. You've seen in some movies, but these guys are really well cast. Best thing I've seen either of them do, I'm going to say, Chris Pine and Ben Foster. And I like both of them. Like them both a lot. Ben Foster.
So did I.
Really good in 310 to Yuma. Which yes, film we'll I was going to say. Point. Yeah, I think he steals that movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We might have to do a 310 to Yuma thing.
I think we'll definitely want to do a 310 to Yuma.
Like with old and new.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We've been talking about that since we started this. It might be time to start getting that onto the front burner. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be a good chance to talk about Ben Foster again in that, because man, he's great in that. But but he's also great in this. I would say I'm actually kind of. Would have said he should be nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
I was just going to say that myself. Yeah.
I
thought he was great. In fact, maybe the standout role, but Jeff Bridges is awful good as well.
Yeah, well, everyone's really good. You know, everyone's really terrific in this. I mean, these characters, I think, start kind of archetypal. Like I've just said, you know, the calmer brother. More respectable than the crazy kind of criminal past brother, and they reveal as the film goes on greater depths, a little bit more complicated worldviews than you originally ascribed to them. I would say really find out, for example, as the film goes on, you kind of begin to realize, oh, Toby is actually the one driving all this. Like Chris Pine.
The instigator, yeah.
Yeah.
The instigator.
Yeah. This is his idea and it's his party, you know. It's his deal. That was a nice little reversal, I thought. But it also makes sense, because otherwise, why would he be involved in this at all?
Right.
Also, during this sequence, we're getting some really great music. Some Nick Cave songs.
Yeah.
I'm actually not sure they're Nick Cave songs, but he arranged the soundtrack. And they sound a hell of a lot like Nick Cave or Dark Leonard Cohen, I thought.
Yeah. Oh, I think the soundtrack's marvelous. I really do.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We'll pick up some of them, put them on this thing. But, And we also meet Bridges. Texas Ranger. Marcus.
And his partner.
Yeah. And his partner. Man, I don't remember his partner's name.
I don't either.
Birmingham?
Calls him Chief.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Calls him all kinds of things.
This guy's great, too. This guy is terrific in this movie. He's, I only recognize him from a minor role on a Netflix sitcom called the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Which have you ever seen that?
No.
It's very funny. It's like 30 Rock. I enjoy it very much. But yeah, he's on there every now and then. And
it's a comedy then?
Yeah.
I can see him in a comedy.
Well, he's very funny in this. Yeah, they are more comic, I would say. The whole movie's kind of funny, but Jeff Bridges and his partner have some excellent repartee. Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Wordplay and such, and this again is a stock character, which is the old detective right at the end of his 2 weeks before retirement, going out for one last. Big case
assignment. Yeah.
Okay, that character's name is Alberto Parker. I don't know if they ever say that.
Alberto. Yeah, he calls him Alberto a lot.
That's what sets it off. And the rest of the film is kind of just—it's a pretty slow burn in a lot of ways. There's a couple brief bank robbery sequences in the first half, but mostly this is it's just a cat and mouse game of driving across Texas. They're kind of moving around trying to launder their money and keep from being seen, keep from being caught, and he's chasing them. And mostly it's kind of just head games until the last half hour or so when it goes crazy.
And I'm not bored ever in this film.
Not at all.
It's we keep coming back to the script, and that's what keeps it moving.
Mm-hmm. Every little scene reveals something more about them, some piece of information about these characters that just makes you think of them a little bit differently. Some piece of interaction with the waitress or with the teller. It all kind of.
Oh, and the constant teasing back and forth between Bridges and Alberto.
Oh, yeah.
Marcus and Alberto.
That walks a line, man. That's a...
Yeah.
That's not Murtaugh and Riggs style.
No.
Teasing. As from the popular Lethal Weapon franchise.
You can tell that Alberto gets a little miffed from time to time.
Yeah,
But never loses his cool.
There is a racist edge to it that is perfectly played. Like it's no ugliness to it, but it goes farther than you expect it to, for sure.
And probably farther than Alberto would like it to go.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But he puts up with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there. it prevents Bridges from being the total. White hat hero kind of archetype, I would say, is that it gives him a little bit more of a lived in quality,
That's a good way to put it.
It places him within the context of this world that he lives in. And, mm-hmm. It's all in good fun, as far as he sees it.
Well, what does he say? He says, "Well, I'm just working on the Indian thing now. I'll go to the Mexican thing later."
Yeah, yeah, because Alberto is half Indian, half Mexican.
Right.
So he just gets an opportunity to get in all sorts of slurs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's edgy. It's edgy, and it's funny because Jeff Bridges can deliver these lines in a humorous way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's got it down.
Like that scene is like when they're, you like soccer, don't you? Your people created soccer, didn't they? Was it with heads you played?
Kicking around heads, that's right. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Your people created soccer.
Jokes about war whoops and alcoholism, a lot of stuff. Yeah. That's just like, whoa, dude.
Alberto gets on his case occasionally as well.
Yeah, but it's not as
it's not as dude. Biting. Yeah. Yeah,
it's just like, ah, you're old. It's
yeah, that's right. I almost started to feel sorry for you there. He says at one point.
Everyone's smart in this, like you said. You know, they're amateur bank robbers, but they're thinking stuff out. You know, they're only taking the loose bills. They're only hitting these small chains. You know,
early in the morning before they build up a lot of cash.
Places that aren't busy. You know, they're not right. Taking stuff where they could get the ink bomb included from losing Arizona. And Jeff Bridges is really smart too. I mean, that's what you want in a movie lawman is being really clever. He sees every move they're making, and you know he's patient and he understands. Like, oh no, not these guys. He's right about everything,
yeah.
And knows how to predict their moves a little bit. It goes a long way for me. Smart character.
Yeah, he zeroes right in on the last heist.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to post. They're going to hit the bank and post. And sure enough.
There's a scene at a Denny's or Denny's-esque restaurant early on. Very good. It's across the street from a bank. Where this kind of is the Robin Hood runner in the film is kind of established here. Which is... Chris Pine is kind of flirting with the waitress.
Sort of,
a little bit. She likes him a little bit.
I think he lets her flirt with him.
Yeah, exactly. And leaves her a huge tip. While his brother is robbing a bank across the street.
Right.
which is probably the biggest screw up they make in this film in a lot of ways. It just kind of works out for him because everyone is so opposed to the bank, they don't want to... they avoid giving the cops any good information just because they're like, you know what? Screw that bank. That bank's been stealing from me my whole life.
Yeah, which works for him until the last bank. Then you got a vigilante posse. Well, all these guys just kind of hanging around the bank that all have guns, right?
Well, I mean that's part of the gun culture there, wouldn't you say? I mean, this is I don't want to, paint with a broad brush with this stuff, but I get the sense everybody's kind of itching to pull out the gun and be a hero in at least as presented in this film. Like this is gun culture. This is why people love guns. Is my impression is that it gives a sense of it provides a sense of strength and purpose.
Yeah, but what I'm saying,
what I'm saying is that
you're right. That is part of the gun culture, but they're willing to pull out their guns and shoot down the bank robbers.
Oh, they're excited!
You know,
instead of
siding with the bank robbers over the nasty banks.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they're just like they're super defensive about the bank. Is the thing? I don't think they're doing it on behalf of the bank. I think they're just like, whoa. Well,
here's
I got
an opportunity
a, I got a chance
for me to shoot my
hero.
Gun.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I got a chance to step up here.
Yeah.
And and this is another part of the is it okay to call it the myth of the Western hero at this point. The person who can take care of a situation, you know? And to some extent, the myth of gun ownership that, you know, that this is, you know.
Yeah, that seems to figure into it.
Yeah, uh-huh. And, you know, these are all people that, you know, they're all people who are at the bank. I mean, the banks, as presented in this film, are institutes built on screwing regular people. So
they were either at the bank or they were near the bank and saw the bank robbery go down.
Mm-hmm.
But I was amazed. How many cars were chasing him? There must have been five or six cars chasing
him. And
it's all
civilians, yeah.
Uh-huh. All civilians with guns. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Everyone is carrying in this film. It's super dangerous. It's scary. I mean, it feels like an Old West, in a sense.
Yeah.
A lawlessness.
That was one of the scenes that kind of made me think of a Western in a modern setting.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, that among others, but that one particularly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's another scene in here. It happens in this early sequences of events, I guess, where Bridges is on his partner on their way somewhere, and they have to stop the route they're going because there is a brush fire and the road is covered with a herd of cows that is being moved.
Yeah, real cowboys.
Guys on horses, and there's just a sense on almost of just, I can't believe it's 2016 and we're doing this. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
It's And that's the cool stuff, you know. That's like.
What does the guy say? He said, "And I wonder why my kids don't want to do this shit job."
But I mean, it is the myth of the West again. God, I'm gonna stop saying that phrase, but that's what. That is the world view of everyone in this film, I feel like, is there the industries of civilization, the machines of civilization are, they're necessary, but they're not helpful individually. Like, it is self-determination, you know, you are responsible for your own lot to some extent, but, you know, the deck is stacked against you. So
yeah,
whatever you can kind of take, whatever you can kind of grab, you know, that is your responsibility to do that. That feels like something that you would, a worldview, a point of view you would have if you were growing up in the ruins of the Old West, you know, of a vanishing, world of westward expansion and manifest destiny and shaping the frontier to your own.
Well, and another theme we see in Westerns all the time is present here as well, is the big difference between what is, quote, lawful, unquote, and what is right.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing in this film. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we'll talk about the banks a little bit. I mean, what's going on here? Why they are running this, why they are after money, why they need money is their mother, who just died, died in debt to the bank, who offered her a predatory loan.
Reverse mortgage thing, yeah.
For her mortgage. Is that right? The mortgage?
It was a reverse mortgage, yeah.
Yeah. And as their lawyer says at one point, like, they really screwed her with this. Like, this is just enough money to keep her poor forever.
right.
And
so they can, and then when she can't pay to buy the mortgage back, for example,
mm-hmm.
they take her land for $25,000, which is rich with oil.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a screw job. And so what their plan is to steal from that bank, from that specific chain of banks, enough money to pay off the mortgage, maintain
right.
ownership, and then have a fortune for, as it turns out, Chris Pine's estranged wife and children. He's got a poor family that he's wants to set up, that he's divorced, can't hang out with, but he wants to take care of him, kind of deal.
Right.
And Ben Foster, you know, will kind of just do whatever his brother needs him to do. Because he's kind of a guy living on the edge at the end of his rope.
Right. But he's got a couple of ideas of how things should go down himself. He's a Comanche, that's right. That's a great scene.
Let's talk about that. Yeah, the casinos. Part of their plan, a big leg of their plan, is to launder the money through casinos, which, you know, is what you do. That's what I would do if I were trying.
If you had to buy back a reverse
mortgage. I just won 40 grand at the casino. And
so Ben Foster's playing what, blackjack?
Yeah.
At one of the tables, and one of the other guys at the table is this Native American, and Ben Foster says, "So you Comanche?" And he says,
"Yeah."
What is it? He says something to don't push me, chief, or something like that. Uh-huh. And the Native American gets a little upset and stands up and he says, "Do you know what Comanche means?" And he said, "No." Nah. He says, "It means you're all my enemies," or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. It means everyone is my enemy.
Everyone is my enemy, right? And he says, "So what does that make you?" He says to Ben Foster, and he says, "You know what that makes me? That makes me a Comanche." I love it.
So good.
I love it.
That's one of his best scenes, man. And that sets up the end of the film, too. Yeah. I've just got it written down in my hair in my notes. Comanche scene! And this is I love this casino, too. This is this is like a local casino, not like not one of the big ones, you know, not a Mohegan Sun or what's the one out there? Tulalip.
Oh, Tulalip, yeah.
Yeah, not a fancy casino. Like this is, you know, this is an Aurora Boulevard casino.
Drift on in.
Yeah. And they have the coin slots. I miss coin slots, man. I really miss coin slots. They were on their way out once I got old enough to gamble, too, you know? I really miss going around with a plastic cup full of quarters. Otherwise, what are you doing at a slot machine? It's just a way to lose money.
Yeah.
Those electric ones?
You can still find them. You can still find them.
Yeah, clearly. They're at one in this place, you know? At the with the big arrow in the ground casinos, whatever this place is that they go to. let's see, what else is what else happens at the casino? Prostitute tries to sleep with Chris Pine. Ben Foster scares her away.
Foils that plan, yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Well, this is how they launder their money, and they go and they cash in their chips and get a certain amount of, they need cash, but mm-hmm. the rest of it they have written up as a check to Texas Midlands Bank.
Brilliant.
So they're going, the bank that's screwing them over is the one they're going to use to get back at them.
It's a really good plan.
Yep.
I mean, if I were a dumb shit criminal, I would see this movie and try to emulate this, I think. As a Coen Brothers character.
A dumb shit criminal. These guys aren't dumb shits, though.
No, well, but
they're inexperienced.
Clearly, they came up with it on their own. I would be like, what's a good idea? Oh, I know. I saw this in a movie once. It's...
Right.
Meanwhile, Jeff Bridges is doing a tour of the various motels and steakhouses of West Texas, drinking Shiner Bock consistently and meeting colorful characters like the waitress at the steak restaurant. Real scene stealer, that.
the one who refuses to give up her tips, give up the money that the guy left.
Oh no,
as
she's
evidence.
Great. She's great. I like that actress. She's an Eastbound and Down. But no, I'm talking about the angry old woman who's just like,
oh, yeah.
Well, what ain't you getting? because I know what you're getting.
Don't you
you're
want?
You're getting steak and a potato, but what ain't you getting? You ain't getting the green beans, or you ain't getting it. Yeah. We had one person come in here in the 1980s. He ordered a trout. That lady.
We don't have no fucking trout.
Great extras, this. Or not extras, like bit players, you know, day players. Everyone with five lines in this is really good. You know, yeah. Like that guy, old guy with the coins at the beginning, or this waitress, yeah. Or anybody sitting at the diner who doesn't want to tell on them because they hate the bank so much. It's real great, yeah. Great minor character cast here. So I mean, you know, we're kind of getting through a lot of the, you know, the amble that is this larger part of this film. It's, you know, points up a lot of the inherent problems with capitalism on a, you know, on a national scale, how this creates, you know, banks that essentially, you know, exist to make money. And so therefore, you know, will screw people because that is what they are built to do. And, right. And yeah, and the only thing a man can do to is sort of rage against it, or at least as it is performed, presented in this film. And that's, I guess that's what the movie is about, ultimately. I mean, Bridges has a code, too, but I don't know, that's actually an interesting thing going on here. The intersection of morality between Bridges and the brothers.
Right.
It's not...
what is
like
lawful
you said,
and what is right?
There's no bad guy. There's no bad guy.
Right.
I mean, like I said, you get the sense that, you know, these guys are doomed, but I think that as smart as they are, the reason for that is because it's not a moral thing. It's just because they're going up against the system. Like, you know, the reason that they are never going to be able to win is because the game
the
is stacked.
The system is too pervasive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, there's no way this is going to end happily.
Yeah. And yet.
Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. But. Yeah. I mean, it's just a really, really wonderful film to watch. The tone is terrific all throughout. Like, it just even scenes where nothing's going on. Jeff Bridges and his partner waiting outside of a bank because they don't really have a better plan other than to wait outside this bank until they show up to rob it. You know, that's a great scene. It ends up being really clever. Actually, that's
or the scene where they're watching TV in the motel room.
Yeah,
I thought that was great too.
Mm-hmm. There's a bit of an on the nose bit of dialogue for the for Alberto, where he's talking about your people stole all this land from my people, and now the banks are stealing it from you.
Yep.
I still liked it because that guy nailed it.
Yep. 150 okay. years ago, this was all our land.
So ultimately, it comes down to one last bank that they have to hit. And that is the bank in the town of Post. You know, after they've been going across the, you know, across the state, hitting all these small towns, every Texas Midlands bank in, you know, each of these teeny little, you know, 10,000 population towns or less. And then they got to hit the big one, which is not the big, big one, but it's the biggest of their list, which is Post.
Right.
And everyone kind of figures out that's the only one left at the same time. So just as the brothers are descending on it, so too is Bridges and his partner. They're in a hurry at that point. So they have
to. Well, because they were going the wrong direction, they had to change directions. That was Ben Foster's contribution to the plan, right? He said, "No, it's too late to. There's not enough money in Coleman, so we got to go to Post." Mm-hmm. They had to turn around and go back the other way, which meant
right,
they couldn't arrive
the
first
banks,
thing in the morning like they had been.
And one of the banks was shut down. The one that they had planned to go to had been foreclosed on itself.
That's right.
Yeah. Right, so yeah, they got to show up at lunchtime when it's busy. You know, that's breaking with the rules, you know. And as always happens in a movie, when the bank robbers break their own rules, it all goes wrong, just like in Point Break.
And surprise, surprise, there are a couple people with guns.
Yeah. Well, there's like 25 people in this bank. I mean, so far, by the math that the movie has already established, like, what, at least 5 of them are going to have guns.
Well, you got the security guard who's got a gun,
mm-hmm.
and you got another guy lying on the floor who's got a gun, and then you got all those guys outside who have guns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who's got a gun is definitely going to have to make a move on him at this point. That's the rules. That's how it goes. It has to. It's also great and awesome. It's great. It's
yeah, it is.
It's really terrific. It's a great sequence here. Everyone's got a gun, like the Old West. And you know, of course, they end up having to kill some people here. And man, it's shocking when people start getting killed in this, even though
right.
you have no reason not to expect it in this kind of film. Even still, it's just like you've gotten to really like these characters at this point. And seeing them blow people's heads off, you're like, oh man.
Did they really have to do that? Yeah.
They're running. They're doing a getting out of town. They're in their car, trying to get out of town, being chased by civilians. The cops aren't even there. It's just guys like saw them rob a bank and was like, oh, grab the shotgun, get in the pickup, and they're going to chase after them down the highway.
And yep.
The only way they're able to get them off their tail is for Ben Foster to pull the car over and just walk down the middle of the street with an Uzi shooting at them. That's really cool, huh?
That scares the hell out of him.
God, that was cool.
Yeah. So they figured, yeah, well, that's enough of that, and they all turn tail and head back to town.
Yeah, but it's enough time for the cops to get involved. Cops are in pursuit now, and I mean, this is it. This is the end of the film now. They split up, Foster and
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, yeah. One of them goes one way with the money. That's Chris Pine. Ben Foster is going to lead the cops away. And that, like, he doesn't seem to have much of a plan, but he seems very confident.
On the other hand, Chris Pine asked him, where he's headed, what he's going to do, and he doesn't answer. So he's got it in mind that he's probably not going to make it out of this. I think.
You think he's good? Yeah. He's already thinking Last Stand?
I think Last Stand. Yeah,
I mean, I definitely think this character is ready for that, you know?
Especially when he, lights the car on fire and sends it down the road.
Yeah, at that point, there's nothing. That's what it is. Like, Chris Pine gets away in the other car. He's, he doesn't have any... There's no reason to suspect Chris Pine at this point. He's getting a different vehicle. And so he's able to sort of slink away in the opposite direction. You know, he gets through a
roadblock.
Roadblock, yeah, because he's technically they don't know these guys' names or faces yet. While Ben Foster leads the cops out to a bluff and
up into the hills, yeah,
up into the hills. Sets his car turns it into a gasoline bomb, and just heads up onto a cliff with a sniper rifle, just starts taking people out. It's pretty amazing. It's
and I really hated to see Jeff Bridges Alberto get it here.
That shocked me. That shocked me when he shot Alberto in the head. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But then you get Jeff Bridges' reaction to it, which is to get this guy at all costs, right?
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. Jeff Bridges has been, he's been approaching this as sort of a Columbo figure up to this point, I would say, kind of world weary, really smarter than he lets on, but dispassionate. Then when Alberto goes down, it shocks him. Shocks him.
I thought he did that really well.
Oh yeah, that's where he really earned his Oscar nomination, I think.
Yeah.
The last 25 minutes or so of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes mad, when he decides to, when it gets personal for him, and
yep.
yeah, he sold that beautifully. And he kind of outsmarts him at this point. While Foster is raining down, you know, on the guys in front of him, he and another, you know, cop kind of go around, get on a different bluff with a sniper rifle, flank him, and are able to take him down with a headshot. And it's amazing. It's an amazing action scene. And it, because this film has not been action heavy, this hits so hard. This is such an exciting like
that was powerful.
Sequence.
That was really powerful. Uh-huh.
And man, that final stand up there. He looks out on the prairie, it's just like, what is it he says?
Lords of the Prairie.
Lord of the Plains.
Lord of the Plains, that's it. Lord of the Plains, yeah.
I mean, I was really surprised that Alberto went down, but I guess I shouldn't have been, because movie calculus, you know, kind of says somebody's got
going
to,
down.
And you know, and it, you know, it would probably be of the four main characters, probably the one that's not a name actor would be the first to go. Still, really surprised me, man. Yeah, both these guys, Bridges and Foster, in this sequence. Oh, wow. This is a great scene. This is a great scene. and that's ultimately that is the climax of the film. The rest is, you know, falling action at this point, but that's the big stuff.
I do like the exchange between Bridges and Chris Pine though at the end.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
that's fantastic.
That is no less pretty amazing. It's I mean, there's one thing that bothers me about the end of this movie, which is there is no. I don't know why they weren't able to connect Chris Pine to this. Like, I don't know why they weren't able to look at, like, you know, his bank, you know, his dealings with the bank, and be like, well, this is deeply suggestive.
Well, yeah, but there's no hard evidence. He could have said he won at the casino.
Yeah, right? But I mean, everyone's just like, no, he had nothing to do with it, clearly, and no, he clearly did. It's very, very obvious that he had something to do with it. You just haven't figured out exactly what the paper trail is yet, but there's a preponderance of circumstantial evidence.
Well, and that's what Jeff Bridges tells him. He says he's gonna. You know, come after him, but Chris Pine says, "Well, you come after me, you know, or I could just blow you off the porch right now, you know, if you go for your gun."
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Is Jeff Bridges shows up at Chris Pine's newly renovated, officially owned, mortgage-free home with oil derricks already set up.
Right.
Earning, they said, upwards of $50,000 a month for him.
yep.
And basically says, yeah, I know what happened. I understand exactly what you did. And they basically have an ice-cold face-off on the porch right there, where they're just like, are we going to shoot each other right now? I think we might be about to shoot each other right now. And then his family pulls up in a car. And that quashes it.
Yeah.
Not in a,
but
no
they leave
sense
it
of
open.
Permanence to that, though. Oh yeah,
that's right. They leave it open.
It's like, well, I guess you're not getting shot by me today. but yeah, what is it? The exact exchange here is like, hey, well, I live in town. You know, if you want to finish this conversation, you show up there. And it's like, well, I think I might just do that.
Yeah.
This'll haunt you the rest of your days, son. Me too.
But I'm glad they left it there, rather than, you know, carry it to some sort of conclusion there, with one of them getting killed.
I don't know, because I was of two minds about this. Initially, I was like, no, that's the end. Oh, it's like a No Country for Old Men kind of ending for me. But I mean, simply because I don't know what exactly is purchased by that ending, other than they couldn't quite figure out how the right way to end it was, you know. Like, it's a great scene, and it ends very well, and it's kind of like a, you know, when you see the credits after it, you're just like, ooh, ice cold. But ultimately, I think they're just like, and then a few days later, the actual final confrontation happens. It's just not, they couldn't quite figure out which way that should go.
Do you think it was a nod to what audiences might like? I wonder if they filmed a different ending.
I don't know. I mean, it does feel like the right ending when it's happening. I just...
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like
I like
was,
the ending.
Yeah. I mean, I want to know what happened. Because it wasn't like an elliptical kind of maybe nothing happened. You know, I guess we just let it stand. There's a clear indication something's going to happen. Like, there's something else that is going to happen in this story. Even if it's nothing. That is an unrevealed final card. I'm not entirely sure what it buys the film.
But nothing is going to affect the fact that the land is paid for and that his kids are set up for life with the oil derricks. That's been set up.
That's right, yeah. Uh-huh.
Right? And the law can't touch that. The banks can't touch it. It's all free and clear. Unless
Jeff Bridges proves he... Well, that's... I mean, I guess the idea is there's no proof at this point, and it would just be, you know, a matter of whatever justice between these two guys, because Jeff Bridges is mad about Alberto, and is probably not going to let this go, especially because he's sure he knows what happened now. Yeah. So, it's elliptical.
And if Alberto hadn't gotten it, it would have been a different ending, probably.
Absolutely. I don't think that any of that would have gone down. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have been impressed. He might have been like, you know, oh, I know what you did, just letting you know. But no, he's too mad. And, that's great. I mean, I guess I think that more or less covers it. I thought it was
pretty
very
much.
Good.
I thought it was just a great movie. I really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh. I really thought this was gorgeous. Yeah, I love this film. I'm giving it 4.5 stars myself.
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but I'd probably have to go along with you. I didn't see anything wrong with it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, 5 is awful good, you know. I mean, that's best ever stuff. But
yeah.
4.5, yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, this is if I were to make a top 10 list of 2016, this would be on it, for sure.
Yeah.
And like I said, I of the nominated films, I think this would be the one I'd vote for. You know, Moonlight's real good, but... This was the one that, you know, grabbed me the most, and I think a large part of that is because I'm a bit of a Western fan, actually.
Attaboy. That's my son.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, of course. Like a podcast about it. So, you know, it's really terrific and you should watch it. I mean, it's already too late because we've spoiled the ending for you, but...
it's worth watching anyway.
Yeah, watch it anyway. Watch it anyway. Or, you know, good job already watching it. one of the two. It's an excellent film. And I love this genre, this subgenre of the Western. Sort of the modern day, the descendants of the Western kind of film.
Yeah.
We've talked about doing some more of these, like Thunderheart would be one that we definitely want to hit at some point.
Thunderheart.
Lone Star is a great one. John Sayles' film is all about legacy and the history of the West. That's a very good movie. Hopefully we'll get around to some of those or others of the genre. I don't know, any further thoughts about these or about Best Picture nominated Westerns? Anything?
Wow. It's really tough to compare this film to the other films that were nominated for Best Picture. The other Westerns that were nominated for Best Picture.
Well,
I mean...
There tends to be a social issue concern in all the nominated ones. I mean, not always. But, True Grit didn't really have one. But certainly in the modern day ones that are, you know, as I said, descendants of the Western. Brokeback Mountain, certainly. No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men, yeah.
Yeah. you know, Unforgiven, Dances with Wolves. Those are social issues to some extent. Well, I call Dances. I call Dances. Unforgiven is more revisionist kind of view of the West, but there's a little extra something. You don't see a lot of straight up westerns just getting nominated. True Grit would be the closest I can think of that list. You know, and then back in the old day, who knows what?
Yeah, well, back in the old day, you had Stagecoach and Cimarron.
Yeah, is Cimarron have a? I don't know anything about Cimarron. Is the truth? All I've ever knew about it is that's the first, up until Dances with Wolves, the only Western to win Best Picture.
Story of a guy who is a real mover and shaker back in the Old West, you know, and he helps develop the land and cities and towns and but he's got restless feet, he's got wanderlust, and ends up leaving his wife and kids and everything, going off and it's kind of an epic story of his life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, maybe someday we'll do Cimarron. Yeah. Okay. What else have you been watching lately, Dad?
Oh, geez, I watched a couple of movies. I saw Inferno.
How is that? Ben Foster.
It was, Ben Foster again, that's right. I was disappointed, first of all, that they didn't follow the ending in the book.
The ending of that book is awesome.
Yes, it is, and they didn't.
Why?
You know,
why even make that movie if you're not doing the ending?
Because they had to save the world in the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah, the end of that book is just this fatalistic, just like shrug, and it's amazing.
Yeah, great. And I kept hoping that they would do that, but they didn't. Ron Howard decided not to. I guess I don't know.
So cool. It's this conventional airport literature thriller, you know, that then, you know, you get to the end and it's just like, whoa, that is ballsy.
Right. And they didn't do it in the movie at all. It was an exciting climactic scene at the end and everything, but no, they saved the world.
Yeah, it's too bad.
too bad.
Yeah, interesting ass book. I don't know. I haven't liked any of those movies very much. I'm not a huge fan of Dan Brown, but I have read a number of his books, including Inferno. And I don't like any of the movie adaptations. That's why I didn't go to this one, even though I was kind of curious. And anyway, I'm sure I'll rent it, even though everyone says it's
bad.
You know,
Angels and Demons was the best of the lot, I think.
Book and movie, I would agree.
Thought it was okay.
Well, I don't know. I might like the book Inferno more than the book Angels and Demons because of that crazy ending.
So did I.
Yeah.
I thought Inferno was his best book.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
Angels and Demons is just, it has one of the dumbest sequences I've ever read in a book in it. He escapes from a helicopter.
That's the Da Vinci Code, isn't it? No, you're right. Angels and Demons, you're right.
Or he uses
And he floats down with a big piece of metal, right?
Yeah,
into the Tiber.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dumb. Yeah. You're right. They avoided that in the movie.
Yeah. That's a franchise that I don't have a lot of affinity for, despite having seen them all. I got to check out Inferno, even though it's probably bad.
Well, they're kind of fun reads. I mean, you know, what the heck?
I did not read the Washington, D.C. one. Everyone said it was terrible, and they skipped it in the franchise.
Which one's
they
that?
Decided not to make a movie out of it. I think it's called The Last Symbol.
Oh, I read that one too, but I can't remember it very well.
I mean, more of the same, I'm sure. Set in D.C. What have I watched? Oh, you know what I watched? I watched John Wick again.
John Wick.
Again.
Wow.
I can't get enough John Wick.
They got two coming out, don't they?
It's coming out
John
this
Wick
weekend.
John Wick 2? Is it really?
Yes. Yes. The early word is that it's excellent.
All right.
It absolutely is everything you want from a
John Wick movie.
Oh, man.
Well, I... Torben and I watched the man who would be king.
Oh, good.
And yeah, you know, just we, you know, he gave me that one and three others for Christmas, and we finally got around to watching it. It was great. Just such a great movie.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah. Top 10. I love the last scene when Michael Caine shows up in his office at the end. And Danny was holding his hand. I can't do a Michael Caine.
Daddy just fell all the way down. Took him an hour to reach the bottom. Felt like a whirly gig. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. It's great.
Are they singing the Soldier Boy as he's walking out on the bridge? Oh, God. What a, great film. That is a masterpiece. God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah. Everyone should watch John Wick and The Man Who Would Be King. Because they're excellent.
That's right.
And Hell or High Water. It's just, yeah, like a bunch of good stuff this week, huh? This is a good
stuff.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we got here? There is one thing that I have got to figure out. We have now done more episodes than are able to be held on iTunes easily. Now, I don't know much about internets and podcasts and stuff. I've been learning it all this year kind of on the fly. So, if anyone has suggestions, please email us at westernswithdad@gmail.com.
Suggestions on how to keep everything online?
Yes, well, I'm trying to figure this out. Once we hit 25 episodes, the first episode got bounced off the feed on iTunes. Which means that if you want to listen to the first episode, you have to go to the website and hunt it down and find it. It's not included on the feed anymore through iTunes, through the app on iTunes. You can only download... when this episode goes live, that'll bounce Quigley Down Under off too, so the first two episodes will not be available through iTunes until I resolve this. I know it can be done, I just haven't figured out how. It might involve spending money. Whatever. I'm going to check it out.
That's what I was thinking.
But
a little extra storage space.
If you have to, if you're looking for early episodes of the show, they are available on our website at westernswithdad.com. You can get the first two episodes, Sons of Katie Ogle and Quigley Down Under there. All the rest of it are available there as well, or on iTunes, where we could also use reviews and ratings. The more of those have been coming in, they are greatly appreciated. That's awesome. Thank you very much. And also, you can email us if you have any requests, any movies you would like to see us talk about. We'll be doing a request next week, as a matter of fact, next 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now. We're going to be doing My Name is Nobody. Bit of a deeper cut. I don't know much of anything about this. I know Terrence Mann is in it, and it has a very good reputation. I'm quite excited for it. My Name is Nobody is going to be on the next episode. I don't know, Dad. Anything else? Anything else we got to talk about right now?
Well, I don't know if I want to get depressed talking about the Super Bowl, but
was pretty irritating. Let's not. let's just leave that.
Let's
one.
Leave that one alone, mm-hmm. huh?
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. I can't. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just bad.
I'm more upset with Atlanta than I am with the Patriots.
Yeah. Well, that's how stories end in America
the way they
nowadays.
Just gave it away. The way they just folded.
Uh-huh. This is just the world we live in. Yep. Okay. Yeah. All right, on that note, thank you for joining us this weekend. We will see you in 2 weeks for My Name is Nobody. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Adios, amigos.
Of the chase that my life brings. How small a part of time we share till we hear the sound of wings. I am lost in the dust of the chase that my life brings.